head. Could they be simply waiting for the resistance to fade and then push again quietly undercover at a later date?
Well, their official announcement was that they do not plan to return for the foreseeable future. And so their status right now is that their leases in the Chukchi Sea expire in 2020, and they have a lease in the Beaufort Sea as well that expires in 2017. And they've already applied to extend those last year. So our hope is that now that it's clear that, I mean, they didn't find sufficient amounts of oil and gas worth continuing exploration there. And when you add on the incredible environmental and climate concerns about drilling for Arctic oil and gas, that the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management decides to not allow them to extend those leases.
This is all very good news. I'm wondering if this pullout by Shell applies to one local small region, or if this covers a much larger area.
The hope is that this is the beginning of keeping Arctic oil and gas in the ground, which is needed for a safe climate future. I mean, in order to stay below what scientists have advised are dangerous levels of global warming, the 2 degrees Celsius by mid-century, Arctic oil and gas is unburnable, and that has to remain in the ground. So our hope is that because Shell, even though there are other companies that hold leases for drilling for oil and gas in the Arctic, Shell was the only one reckless enough to go up there and actually do it. So the fact that they've come up dry, I think, is a really good sign, and I think should be a warning for other companies to stay out of there, and should also be send a strong message to the Obama administration that they should not extend any more leases in the Arctic and cancel any future lease sales for oil and gas in that region.
I'm kind of wondering, I guess it's my suspicious nature, but after 7 years, and now to realize that they've come up dry, it seems awfully strange.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it I think with all of the strong public opposition, like we mentioned, including in Portland and in Seattle and across the United States, and with the overwhelming evidence that's been coming out about the dangers of drilling for oil and gas in that region, not just for our climate, but for the wildlife that are there and for the over 75% chance of a large oil spill should oil be produced in that area. I mean, we need to just keep that oil and gas in the ground and keep those companies away from that area.
Yeah, we had a huge turnout here in Portland, and I'm sure this is good news for everybody that was involved. It's good news for the climate, good news for the earth. I'm talking with Marissa Knodel, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Cliff.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Out Loud.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual Purple Mile Walk, Saturday, October 10th at 10 a.m., starting at the Center for Self-Enhancement in Portland. The walk ends at King Elementary School with a celebration to show solidarity and celebrate survivors of domestic violence. Again, that's the first annual Purple Mile Walk, Saturday, October 10th at 10 a.m., starting at the Center for Self-Enhancement, 3920 North Kirby Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
Welcome to Preference, an experiment in queer radio. I am your host, Alan. This is one of the shows on the queer news and culture slot here, Tuesdays 6 to 7 every week. We have a rotating series of shows, one each week of every month. So tune in for fresh voices every week, something new. That was the theme song to Out Loud, and we're honoring Out Loud tonight. It was the program that preceded this series that we've got 13 years on the air. Congratulations to everyone who helped to make that possible, and thank you, listeners. We just had a really great pledge drive, so thank you for everyone who signed up to be a member of KBOO. Tonight, Preference, we're going to have a couple of conversations that I think are great. There's some stuff coming up starting this weekend. Sounds really interesting. We're going to start with a discussion about the Portland Queer Film Festival. It's starting October 2nd.
Friday.
Thank you. And later we're going to talk with C.M. Hall, who's put together an event called the Coming Out Monologues. It's a storytelling event for LGBTQ folks. Excited about that. We have with us in the studio Gabriel Mendoza, Artistic Director of the Portland Queer Film Festival.
Yes, hello. I am Gabriel, and I'm happy to be here on Preference. This is the festival's 19th year. In one form or another, it's been around for over 20 years, but this incarnation is 19. And I've personally been with the festival for, I believe, this is my 15th year.
All right. Fabulous. So I want to start with a question I've had opportunity to ask folks often on the radio. So this is called the Portland Queer Film Festival. What does queer mean in this context?
There's actually a long story. Well, not long, but behind the name. We originally started off as the lesbian, bi, trans, questioning film festival, I think in the first, second, third year. And we just sort of kept whittling it down until it became the Portland Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. And we wanted to embrace the moniker queer for a long time, but a lot of our longtime supporters they still had issues with the term from its negative connotations. And so we just sort of, waited it out. And it was only about 2 years ago that we embraced it. And queer, it can mean anything. It can mean a sensibility, not specifically a sexuality, although, you know, the demographic for this festival is, you know, queer, gay, lesbian, bi, trans, whatever versions or fluidity of that entails.
Wonderful. Thanks for that. And so my next question, why is queer film important?
I believe that at least culturally in America, we need to see ourselves represented in media and in our culture in some way, and the programming that we have tries to cover all aspects of the community and that sensibility. It's very empowering for people to see themselves in different, you know, besides just seeing their own community, but see themselves at large on the screen.
What's your sense of the commonality, if this is something that exists and can be put into words, among the sensibilities of the folks who are making these films?
Well, it's the filmmaking, the queer filmmaking itself has changed quite a bit since I've been involved. excuse me, I'm just getting over a cold. In when I first began, it just finding queer films was difficult. There wasn't financing. There weren't a whole lot of people out there producing that type of media. And as the years progressed, that changed and increased. And now we have big major studios producing huge, big budget films. And so I think that the sensibilities of the filmmakers are wildly varied now. Not all the people producing these types of movies are queer. Like, for instance, our opening night film, Eisenstein in Guanajuato, is made by Peter Greenaway, who is an acclaimed British filmmaker. And I think he's in his 70s, and he isn't queer, but he's always had an interest in the way people think and operate, you know, at the human base level. He's made a couple of queer themed films. So I think, you know, the filmmaker, you know, trying to identify the sensibility of the filmmakers, I think at this point is impossible.
Sure. And probably a good thing.
Yeah. Hmm.
Before we start to talk about this year's festival and its lineup of film, I'd like to ask you, if maybe, what are the moments, the experiences, the films that you're most proud of having helped be aired, be seen in Portland over these last 15 years?
Wow. Wow. Specifically, I believe, I don't know what year it was, but there was a year shortly after Matthew Shepard was murdered. There was a documentary about him. And we screened it, and it was one of those events where the audience was really engaged, and everybody was there as a community, and you really felt the presence of, I think there were maybe 500 people there. And it was very powerful and intense. And every once in a while, I get jaded because, you know, I'm involved in this line of work, and you see a lot of stuff. And moments like that really bring it home that this still matters. That sort of thing, when you have a whole group of people with the same common emotion and agenda, it's really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. gosh, that's the one that sticks out the most specifically.
All right. Thanks for that. So, this year's film festival debuts October 2nd, Friday, and runs through Thursday, October 8th. Let's start to dig into what's happening.
Okay. Well, the festival lasts a week from October 2nd to 8th. All the films are at Cinema 21, and there are no overlapping screenings. So if should you wish to, you could see every program in the festival. We're kicking off with a film I mentioned earlier, Eisenstein in Guanajuato. This is definitely our favorite film in the festival. And it's just so beautifully made by an auteur in the business. And It's a new, it's not necessarily new because he's been doing this for decades, but his way of filming, his way of telling stories is not traditional. It's heavily, they're heavily structured, really intense cinematography, gorgeous sets, all elements in the film kind of play characters in the film. And it's basically a meditation on Sergei Eisenstein, who was the Soviet director. I guess the height of his fame was in the 1930s. He was commissioned to do a film in Hollywood, but that fell through. And so he got this gig filming a movie in Mexico. And although there isn't specific information, he had this love affair with his chaperone, his guide there. And it sort of changed the way he saw the world and filmmaking. Because I think he made a total of 6 films, and the first 3 are, you know, action-y, kind of bombastic, and the last 3 are more human, more emotional. And so it's basically Peter Greenaway's, you know, a vision of what might have happened or how it played out. Yeah, so it's a real exciting film.
Great, and that's the debut film. They're all at Cinema 21, is that
yes,
right?
Everything's at Cinema 21. All right. And this is the opening night film on Friday.
All right, so what else is coming up here?
we have a really exciting program called In With The New Out. And basically what that is we have 4 filmmakers coming to town who have produced web series that are fairly popular. And the 4 filmmakers will present an episode from their series, and there'll be a panel discussion after it. We mentioned queer filmmaking changing and shifting. Filmmaking itself is also changing and shifting now that we have access to get a huge... And the new way they are going to lead a work.
Web digital episodes will be shown on...
I can't remember. Kieran mentioned the workshop, the old shop.
Dreamed of creating...
I'm in that era where the idea of a web series when I was a kid made no sense at all. Didn't exist. So sure. I think it wasn't a part of my sensibility. But I think a lot of younger folks, you know... And that isn't necessarily true because there are plenty of people my age that are making and creating these shows. But as somebody who hasn't really produced any kind of film, it hasn't been... in my sensibility.
Before we hear from Kieran Turner, let's talk a little bit more. I see that we'll be able to see Julianne Moore.
Yeah. Well, on October 7th, we have a film called Freeheld, which is a drama based on the true life story of a New Jersey police detective named Laurel Hester. She was in a domestic partnership with her lover, and she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and she made efforts to leave her pension to her partner, but she was denied that. And it was a documentary short film, and then now it has just been turned into a narrative film. And we're having a special panel discussion after the film in Portland. I believe it was 2002 that domestic partnership rights for same-sex couples was granted to police and firemen. And one of the people leading the charge, Katie Potter, she's been a police officer for 26 years, and I believe the first openly LGBT police person on the force is leading the panel discussion. So it'll be a really interesting discussion.
And the subject is
equity in the city. You know how far we've come, where we need to go.
Is that the focus on? Let's just shorthand it and say queer issues, or is it a wider lens?
Well, obviously it's a queer film festival based on the experiences of a lesbian police officer. But Katie's really open to discussing underrepresented groups altogether. So I believe that we will touch on other issues as well.
No, I know that the city just released sort of a racial equity strategy plan, I think in July.
Yeah.
So we're...
So that might come up.
Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing what meat is on those bones and how that can play out. Because it's a city that's supposed to work for everyone.
Yeah.
So that is Freeheld. That is October 7th in the evening. What else do we have coming up?
Well, we've also got some fun films, some comedies. Fourth Man Out on October 3rd is the story of a group of, for better for a better description, blue-collar men who one of their friends decides to come out to them, and it's a comedy about how they deal with it.
Before we hear from Kieran, he's on the telephone. I'll mention that this is Preference, an experiment in queer radio. We're talking about the Queer Film Festival, which begins Friday evening. All films showing at Cinema 21. You can get more information on the festival, pdxqueerfilm.com. Kieran, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, Kieran, it's Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel, how are you?
Good.
Thanks so much for joining us, Kieran.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us what we can look forward to in your visit here.
Sure thing. Well, I am presenting a program and panel that I've been curating for about the last year and a half. It's called In With the New Out, and it's basically a lineup of LGBT-themed web series and online programming. There's going to be six different series, and these are all shows that have launched online. Some are one season, some are two seasons, some are even longer. Saturday night, the 3rd, we're going to be showing six of them, and then we're going to be doing a panel afterwards with four of the content creators, where we're going to be talking about why we as LGBT filmmakers, you know, have brought our stories to the web. And what the benefits are of that. And then the next day, on the 4th, three of us are going to be leading a workshop for aspiring LGBT content creators, you know, people who want to bring their own stories to the web, and listening to their ideas and helping guide them and tell them how they can do it themselves.
Wonderful. Where is the discussion hack taking place?
It's at Cinema 21.
Okay.
Yeah, everything's at Cinema 21.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Kieran, what is your web series?
I have a show called Wallflowers, which will be showing on Saturday night. And it's a comedy series about a Manhattan group of support group for people who can't get dates or sustain relationships. And it's a mix of, you know, straight members and gay members. We've done two seasons. The first season was done sort of self-financed and put out on the web, and it was seen by a brand new online channel who really liked it, and they picked it up and they funded us for our second season. And there was a little bit more gay content in the second season, and we sort of got picked up by all of the gay press and got quite a good following with it. We've also got a couple of other shows, popular shows, Where the Bears Are, which is a really funny bear-centric comedy, murder mystery, that's had four successful seasons. Great documentary series called The Transgender Project out of Canada. We've got a really funny sort of John Waters-esque series called Capitol Hill, which takes place in Seattle. We've got two lesbian-themed series, one called Kelsey, which is about a serial dater in New York City. And the other one is called Producing Juliet, which is by a woman named Tina Cisa Ward, who created a really popular web series a few years ago about a lesbian teenager called Anyone But Me. And this is her new series about a theater troupe in New York City.
So those are showing one episode each?
Correct, yes.
On...
There, four of us will be there on Saturday night.
Saturday evening.
Seven.
So tell us about what's happening on Sunday.
With the workshop?
Mm-hmm.
People are going to come. Everybody's welcome if they've got an idea, if there's something that they've been working on. You know, each one of us has put together our shows and have funded them in different ways. And Tina will be there. I will be there. Rick Kopp from Where the Bears Are will be there. And, you know, each of us has a different kind of expertise in terms of, you know, how we funded our web series, how we produced our web series. For instance, I also work in film marketing, you know, as my day job. So I, you know, worked very hard and, you know, was very instrumental in putting out the word for my web series and other people's web series, and was able to get good press for it. So in any kind of state that you're in, you know, if you're just developing an idea, you know, all of us have written and directed our shows, so we've got that experience and we've produced them. You know, I'm expecting people to come who've got script ideas. I'm expecting people to come who are, you know, just getting ready to shoot. Maybe people have, you know, finished a web series and they're not sure where to, what to do with it, where to bring it, how to get press for it. You know, maybe you just want to get a little bit of guidance on how to start. You know, it's all are welcome.
That sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, it should be a good program. I'm really excited that Gabriel wanted to bring us out to do it because, you know, we've been, like I said, we've been bringing these to other film festivals. And, you know, it's funny. I honestly thought that, you know, what we would really be talking about when we did our panel afterwards were, you know, would be, oh, you know, why we were bringing these stories to the web. And it turns out that, you know, a large portion of the community comes to see these things because they've got an idea, they've got a story that they want to tell, and they want to know how to do it. And so I just sort of thought to myself, well, why don't we do that? Why don't we actually help these people, you know, and guide them and get these stories out there? Because there really is no barrier, you know, into getting your show done. You know, you don't need anybody's permission to do it. You just need to get a group of people together, have a great idea, and, you know, everybody's able to marshal the resources in one way or another to be able to make these things happen. You know, you don't need a huge budget. You don't need stars. You don't need, you know, you just need a good story and people who are willing to work with you.
Can you tell us where Wallflowers comes from? How did you come to be a web series creator?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm primarily a documentary filmmaker, but what really inspired me to want to, you know, to do this, to tell this story was I was on tour with my documentary. It was a queer-themed documentary called Jobriath AD. It was about the first openly gay rock star. And I was getting frustrated with how long it was taking to find distribution for this film. You know, we eventually did get distribution. It did eventually get released. But I wanted to do something that I didn't need to rely on the permission of somebody else in order to get my story out there and to get it seen. And also, you know, I was nearing 40, and I am single. I found myself single again. And, you know, and I was sort of thrust back out into the dating world, and it was sort of odd for me to be out there trying to make connections in a way that I hadn't really done it before. You know, my generation is sort of the last generation of people who, you know, when they first started dating, had to make those connections face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And now everybody's doing it on their phone, on their computer, you know, it's all these different apps and everything, so I wanted to write about a group of people who were sort of single, you know, kind of like past their sell-by date, you know, and were sort of not seen as you know, good pickings, and, you know, how they were sort of getting out there and making these connections and trying to find love, you know, in this big city where everybody was younger than them and, you know, just sort of looked at making connections and having relationships in a different way.
Kieran, I'm going to be checking out Wallflowers. I hope folks will come out Saturday night to see this collection of episodes from queer-themed web series. Kieran, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay. Gabriel, what else can we look forward to at the Queer Film Festival?
Well, every year we do our... Oh, sorry. Every year we do our best to, you know, program as wide an array of content as possible, and we've got in addition to the comedy I mentioned previous, Fourth Man Out, we have I don't know, she's our third time returning champion, Michelle Ellen. I believe all her films have played in our festival. She's been doing a series of lesbian comedies about different scenarios, and I believe, I don't know if she considers it a trilogy, but this one's called S&M Sally. And it's about Michelle plays a woman who's dating another woman who has had some BDSM experience, and it sort of startles her, and she wants to know more about it, but she's not necessarily cut out for it. And it's just, you know, a really light, fun comedy about that. And Michelle will be here for the festival, and that is on October 4th at 7 p.m. at Cinema 21.
I want to ask you, how many films did you screen? to make this festival come into being this year?
God, I don't know the exact number, but we don't put out a call for entries. We don't officially, call for entries, but without even a call for entries, we get, more than 100 people sending us emails and screener links to short films, and generally we have about 15 slots at most. And so if there are 300 or 400 movies out there, it's what 1% can get in. So I don't know what it was this year, but our executive director, Yvonne Behrens, who isn't here, was on the jury for the Berlin Film Festival this last year, the gay segment of it, the Berlinale. And so she saw all the prime films, and Eisenstein was in competition, and she came home raving about it. So, and although I don't believe it won the award, she feels like it should have. So we kind of start with associations that we know. There's certain distributors and folks that provide content that usually have the cream of the crop ready to go. And, we start there, and then we also try to, find anything that's local or something new and unique that hasn't played before. And I'm not sure how much time we have left, but their closing night film is Out to Win, and it's a documentary about queer athletes. It was partially filmed here in Portland. The baseball player Billy Bean will be here, and Connor Mertens, who is the football player for Willamette University, will be in attendance as well. And I recommend everybody come see that as well.
All right, remind us where these films are, when, where.
Everything Plays at Cinema 21 from October 2nd through 8th. You can get the lowdown at pdxqueerfilm.com. Same thing for Facebook and Twitter. It's all PDX Queer Film.
Fabulous. So that begins Friday. Folks, check it out. Gabriel, thanks so much for being
with
us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I want to make a plug right now for something that I work on. It's called Thrill the World Portland. It's the local version of a worldwide simultaneous thriller dance. It's been happening around the world for 9 years with a specific choreography to fill the song, full song based on the choreography in the original Thriller film. And this is our 9th year doing it here in Portland. I believe I'm the only organizer who's been doing it since the beginning, which means, honestly, I've danced this dance so many times. I could do it in my sleep. And I probably have. I probably have. Anyway, we do it as a fundraiser in late October for SMRC, Portland's Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center. And on years when I think, I can't dance Thriller one more time, I remember that it's SMRC that we're doing it for. So that's great. And we often do it we've sort of moved around the city in the last couple of years. We've been in Irving Park in Northeast. And this year we have something really exciting. I think we're going to be downtown again, and the folks who are turning the Ankeny Alley into the Ankeny Plaza, they're going to upgrade and spiff it up. They're going to have a whole zombie-themed event day on October 24th, and they've asked Thrill the World Portland to be the centerpiece part of that. So they're going to close off the street on 2nd from Burnside to just past the alley. So we're going to have a lot of room. We're going to have Saturday Market behind us. I think it'll be fabulous. We average about 175 dancers. We'll teach you the dance. Come find us on the web, thrilltheworld.portland. Just look for us. You can come to our practices. There's also instructional videos online. We'd love to have you. Zombies. Maybe you're not so into the zombies part. You just want to do the dance. That's great. All ages, all abilities. I believe we're going to hear a song for our break. This is one of my theme songs. Okay, that was Alcazar, that fabulous Swedish pop supergroup, Crying at the Discotheque. It's one of my life theme songs, it's true, and it's perhaps Preference's unofficial theme song. I'm Alan. You're listening to Preference, a queer experiment in radio here on KBOO. We're excited to have C.M. Hall on the telephone with us today.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. You are... Tell us about yourself. Give us a hint of who you are.
Sure. I'm from Portland. I live here, and I chair the Basic Rights Oregon Equality Pack, and I work at Western Oregon University, and I teach LGBTQ studies.
Where is Western Oregon State?
Western Oregon University is in Monmouth, Oregon. It's a small public university. We've been saying we're the best kept secret, but we're really willing to let the secret out and let people know more about us.
Where is Monmouth?
So if you know where Salem is, about we're about an hour south of Portland. We're southwest, so we are. If you hit Salem and then you go about 15-20 miles west, that's where you'll find Monmouth.
All right.
There is a Burgerville in Monmouth, Oregon.
Oh, that sounds good. So you are, you have this event coming up, Monologues, and I think you told me that the first time you put it together, was it in Monmouth?
That's right. For a few years, I'd seen this thing kind of batting around higher ed at different universities where they would put on an event called the Coming Out Monologues. In a similar fashion to the Vagina Monologues, which is often performed in the month of February, but the Vagina Monologues are scripted, and they're already pre-scripted, so they're being told by the people in the cast, but they're not the original stories of the people in the cast.
Hmm.
What's different about the Coming Out Monologues is it's a collection of stories from the people who are writing them and authoring them. And so each cast and each production is uniquely different. And this is, our production was students, alumni, faculty, and staff who also identify lesbian, gay, bi, pan, queer, asexual, trans, or straight ally. And it was such a lovely event that I wanted to bring it to Portland because I thought if we can get 250 people in Monmouth, Oregon, a small town, why not bring this to Portland so we start telling our stories about how we came out, what those experiences were. Maybe it was fantastic. Maybe it was easy, and there was no, like, speed bump of letting people understand your identity. But for some people, that was a different story, or it might have been funny, more poignant. We are featuring 15 storytellers, and we run the gamut of history that kind of, like, takes us back into LGBTQ history, gender identity and expression. We're really hearing a lot of diversity in the story.
So is this similar to what you mentioned for the earlier events, that the folks are folks who are performing at the Coming Out Monologues are performing somebody else's story? Is that right?
No, they're telling their own story.
Uh-huh, there we go.
They wrote their story, mm-hmm. and we have edited them for time and impact, but we really wanted to have those personal vignettes. So the people who are reading the stories are the people who wrote them. It's their lives that are unfolding before us. We're getting a snapshot into what it was like, whether they came out last year or 20 years ago. We're just getting a glimpse of that.
So tell us where Coming Out Monologues is, where and when. What are the details?
Sure. It's going to happen on National Coming Out Day, and that is Sunday, October 11th. It's going to be taking place in the theater that Triangle Productions hosts their shows in. So it's in the Sanctuary on Sandy Plaza. And it's the former Salvation Army building. So if people are familiar with where that is, it's Northeast Sandy and 17th, that area. It's limited seating. So we anticipate we will sell out. We are encouraging people to purchase tickets. The event is at 2 p.m., and it's followed by a reception, a hosted reception. And the ticket price, you initially might have sticker shock about the $75, but the deal is all the money for our work, for the Equality Pack, to elect pro-LGBTQ candidates. These are people who understand Basic Rights Oregon's mission, who understand our agenda for trans justice, racial justice, and LGBTQ equality. And so they're putting that money towards that. But the best part is, because it's going towards the Equality PAC, the first $50 that you give to the PAC, any PAC in Oregon, every year goes right back in your pocket when you file your taxes. It's like a rebate. And so the real ticket price is essentially $25, right? I think a really good event for $25 when you think about it, to hear all these lovely stories and really vulnerable moments of people's past. It's going to be an intimate event, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it comes together.
Can you remind us what your position with the Basic Rights Oregon Equality PAC is?
Oh, sure. I'm a volunteer, and I chair the Basic Rights Oregon Equality PAC. And every 2 years, we work to endorse candidates on the legislative and statewide level.
Does the Equality PAC also dig into legislative issues?
Basic Rights Oregon, as an organization, does. We certainly, our board members are part of those decisions and what priorities are made in the legislative session. But what we do is really we work to make sure that we're screening and endorsing and certifying that these candidates are pro-LGBTQ, pro-trans justice, working towards racial justice, that they're on board with Basic Rights Oregon's mission and our agenda.
Now, this is a question that perhaps isn't quite that easy to answer, but what's your sense of how well that's working? How often are the folks that the Equality PAC is endorsing, how often are they getting elected to office? And I ask this because while the station's here in Portland, and lots of our listeners are, we broadcast Southwest Washington and throughout the state. So there are a lot of folks who whose experiences are very different than ours here in Portland.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And what I can tell you is we have a pro-LGBTQ majority in the Oregon House and the Oregon Senate, and obviously in the statewide delegation with our governor, with our treasurer, with our labor commissioner. We have a majority of those who are in elected office right now who have been endorsed by Basic Rights Oregon. Mm-hmm. So that's looking really strong for our issues and being heard and being considered when they're prioritizing legislation. And just in this last legislative session, we were able to successfully pass the conversion therapy bill as well, among that bill, and then also a bill that addressed how we recognize students who are LGBTQ identified in our college system, so that we are making sure that we are tracking their retention and success rates and their identity marker as well.
Let's stop for a second and talk about that conversion therapy bill. The topic is something that we've discussed on the radio a fair amount. There was a conference here last summer, I think, Restoring Hope, which was a gathering of organizations and folks who pursue conversion therapy. So what did this bill accomplish for us?
So the bill really just said that we are banning conversion therapy for those who are under the age of 18. If LGBTQ, if people who are questioning their sexual orientation over the age of 18, they're free to kind of pursue that therapy if that's something that they want to do. But under the age of 18, we recognize that this is damaging to their identity and sense of self. And the legislature agreed with us, and we were successful in passing that legislation. It wasn't just Basic Rights Oregon, but we were working in partnership with a number of other coalition partners to advance that legislation. But that was one of our priority issues.
I know that all sorts of bills are proposed. You know, just the legislators themselves throw out all sorts of ideas, and most of them don't see the light of day because there just isn't time to make it happen. How do you have a sense of how easy or difficult this particular bill was to get through the stages that it needed to go through to become law?
I can't answer that. I don't know that. But we certainly have someone who works on our behalf in the legislature. We have a government relations person who tracks that. And we, again, work with a number of our coalition partners to look and see, like, where their priorities are, where we can be in support of their issues, and as they align with Basic Rights Oregon's mission and vision, and where they can support us. And those are the issues that we prioritized in the session. There were some other issues that we worked on in partnership with other organizations that we were successful in passing this legislative session, but I can't really speak more to specifics on those.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you for giving us some insight into Basic Rights Oregon's Equality PAC. I think for a lot of us, the legislative process is something we learn most about through television programs like Scandal and House of Cards. So it's good to stop and start to pick it apart and see what it's really like.
No doubt. Yeah. And really our work is kind of on the front end of that, to work to get people aware of who the Basic Rights Oregon endorsed and candidates are, who the greenlit candidates are. So we get really excited about that election year work to make sure that people get the news, get the updates on what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And one last question about that. Does the Equality PAC make endorsements in local races?
That's a great question. In some of our larger metropolitan areas, we have a history of making endorsements. Or excuse me, let me be really clear. We have a history of making green light, approval, thumbs up, whatever you want to call that, assessments of the races. Very rarely do we make endorsements on the local level, mm-hmm. but we're open to reviewing that policy so that we can be more places in our state and have more of a statewide presence and support those candidates who support the Basic Rights Oregon mission and vision and work.
It reminds me, if you're an inner north northeast resident like me, Amanda Fritz has a town hall tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. at the Cascade campus of PCC. So perhaps you'll see me there. Let's go back to talking about the coming out monologues and what people can look forward to. And again, let's review where and when this event is. But let me first mention that, folks, you're listening to Preference, an Experiment in Queer Radio. I'm Alan, your host, here on KBOO. We're chatting with C.M. Hall, who's producing the Coming Out Monologues event.
So that's right.
Give us the details.
Absolutely. So it's Sunday, October 11th, which is National Coming Out Day. So we thought it was great timing to put the event together for that day and that time. It's going to be at 2 p.m. at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, which is on Northeast Sandy, around 17th. And the ticket admission is $75. The seating is limited, so we're encouraging people to go online to basicrights.org and follow the events links and purchase your tickets in advance, because we anticipate we will sell out. It is an intimate, seated event.
And so you've heard these stories, all of the stories that will be told that evening. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Can you give us a flavor of what we can look forward to?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Happy to. You know, we have lovely stories, and they really do kind of run the gamut of identity, as I mentioned. Stories from young people talking about what it was like to come out to one woman, who, what it was like to come out to her Mexican father, and how he was sure he didn't want to have a dyke for a daughter. And that's a really charged, you know, that's charged language in our community, right? But the way that she tells the story, you just want to root for the outcome, and it's such a beautifully told story. We have a story from a gentleman who's essentially kind of doing almost like a slam poetry type thing, where he's facing the bullies. We have a story kind of that highlights a lot of those pinnacle moments in our LGBTQ history, talking about, you know, from like the late 1970s and early 1980s, you know, the film An Early Frost, and marching in Washington, and looking at the AIDS quilt, mm-hmm. And just kind of having that coming of age and coming out of age, if you will, in the nation's capital. And we have a story from a young man who talks about his identity and how it doesn't really fit that LGBTQ spectrum, but it's certainly not straight either. It's a really beautiful story. We have a story from a dad who's a member of our Portland police, talking about how he supports his daughter and found out when she was dating, she'd always dated men, and then she announces that she's dating a woman and how he responded to that. There's just some lovely stories. We have stories from people who are hearing and people who are deaf. This event is also interpreted into American Sign Language. Wonderful. And it's just a really nice cross-section of our community telling their stories.
How did you solicit storytellers for this event?
We didn't want to kind of do a big all-call just because it was the first time, and we weren't sure, but we did do some of that, and some people kind of came forward and told us. I had some ideas with some people. I wanted to make sure we heard some real disparate voices and real, you know, varied voices from our community. So I also sought out people in the telling of this event. Mm-hmm. Like, what I wanted to make sure that we really did hit on every kind of as many communities as we can really highlight people's identity if they identified as lesbian, bi, pan, queer, trans, straight ally. We wanted to really just feature a lot of those stories. So that's where it came from. And then not just sexual orientation and gender identity and expression, mm-hmm. but also along racial lines, right? We want to make sure that we're really showing the multicultural fabric of our community, the intersectional identity that people are coming to, that they're coming out about, right? People don't just come out as lesbian, but they also are reconciling their own home communities, their home cultures, their communities of faith, how that all plays in and impacts our identity.
Do you think there's any commonality? This is a question I asked Gabriel earlier when we were talking about the Queer Film Festival coming up during this next week and a half. Do you think there's any commonalities among the stories that you heard in putting this together?
You know, it's having done this event twice now, what I see that people really connect with is when people share from their personal experience and really just kind of get into that vulnerable space. Like, I'm going to tell you something that I would tell you late at night if we were, you know, hanging out in my apartment or hanging out in my house, right? When people start to really kind of tell those stories that and have those moments of feeling that they're really sharing and expressing their feelings, that's when it becomes more, we're more connected to it. When we see and sense that vulnerability in the story. I would also say that there are themes around religion that we all, we've been exposed to a lot of religious dogma and belief systems that have been anti or LGBT resistant, let's say. So that you'll see those themes as well represented in the stories. I don't know what else to say about that.
Well, we'll get a chance to find out. Are you already thinking ahead to the next storytelling event?
Oh, goodness. I really am so proud of this event. Just having heard these stories and wanting to just tell the world how excited I am mm-hmm. about these beautiful stories that we're going to get to hear. So I think if it goes well, if we have a really great turnout, because I think a lot of people are going to be like, oh, I wish I had attended. And we are only limiting it to like 100, 125 seats. That's it. Mm-hmm. I do think that word of mouth will spread and more people will become interested. And I would also love to see more and more LGBTQ elected officials. And what we have in this storytelling event that I'm really excited about is the opportunity to feature one of our own. So a former PAC member, State Representative Rob Nose, he left his volunteer role on the Equality PAC and ran for office and became elected. And he is gay. And he's going to tell his coming out story. So it comes full circle, right? We get to feature an out gay person in elected office. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting for me because I want to hear more stories from our out LGBTQ elected leaders. And we don't have that many yet in our state. But I'd love to see and hear and feature more of those stories as well, if we do this again.
Yeah, that does sound pretty exciting. So let's remind folks where they can get in on the action and hear these great stories.
Sure. Basicrights.org, and go to the events page, or just Google Coming Out Monologues Portland, or Coming Out Monologues Basic Rights, and you'll find the link to purchase your ticket. And again, there is like a $50 tax credit, so it's a really good deal to purchase your ticket.
Yes. And folks, if you're going to cash in that tax credit, make a note, because you're going to have to remember when you do your taxes early next year. So write it down somewhere. Put it on your fridge that you can claim that, so you don't forget about it.
File it in your tax file, and Basic Rights Oregon will send you a tax letter, so you'll have that to attach to your taxes.
Perfect, perfect. CM, thank you so much for being here to tell us about the Coming Out Monologues.
I was honored. I hope to see you all there. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
We're at the end of Preference and Experiment and Queer Radio. Hard Knock Radio is coming up next. I want to mention again, Thrill the World Portland. We have our practices underway. You can come and join us at any time. Come and learn Thriller. And then we'll go out. We'll perform it in public on October 24th in a big zombie horde. All ages, all abilities are welcome. We'll work with you to help you learn the dance. And it is a fundraiser for SMRC, Portland's Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center, now under the wings of New Avenues for Youth. So it's pretty exciting. And I think in the papers today, there was a great announcement of what's coming up for New Avenues for Youth and for SMRC. The just about to open is the Unity House. This is a residential space for queer teens. So it's very exciting. It's something very new in the country and certainly new to Portland. Unity House. Go and take a look on the web and check out the stories about that. We're going to hear a little music to wrap things up. We're going to go back to Crying at the Discotheque. Hard Knock Radio is coming up next. Thanks so much, dear listeners. We'll have another queer-themed show next week. I'll be back the week.